This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing connection to land, waters, and culture. Colonization and genocide are ongoing processes that continue to this day. Sovereignty was never ceded, and this always was, and always will be, Aboriginal land.
G'day everybody, welcome back to Auspol Snack Pod, the podcast where we serve you up bite-sized chunks of Australian news and politics with a side of crispy memes, and we also happen to be the official podcast of the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group, so if you like Facebook groups, Auspol and Shitposting, you should definitely go hang out there. Make sure you answer the questions or you won't get in. I am one of your hosts, my name is Zach Lesnack, I'm a mod on the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group, and with me as always is friend, confidant and member of my inner sanctum,
me, I'm Noon. I'm the admin and creator of Auspol Shitposting, and I'm very glad to be back with you again, Zach. So thanks for joining me once more, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's nice to see your face. Noon is sitting inside his house, which means he's getting a stronger internet connection, which means that we can video chat as opposed to just getting crackly audio. So it's nice. It's good.
It's almost like I'm in the same room as you.
It's almost like it's so close to hanging. I can almost taste the friendship. Moving on. This week we are bringing you an interview with the most important artist of the 21st century, Lazy Susan. It's a good get. For us.
Amazing. We were sort of booked to do Beyonce, but then Lazy called in last minute and we were like, look, sorry B, but you know, sometimes you get a big fish. And
As everyone knows, there is long-standing beef between the two of them, and they they simply won't share airtime. So, we have to look out for our bottom line. So we obviously had to go with the bigger catch
name
there. So we will be bringing you that interview with this icon of the underground Melbourne drag scene later in the show. But before that, we're going to blow through a few newsy bits as well. And before we get into those newsy bits, we just wanted to shout out some people who have helped us out this week. We got a couple of new patrons. Thank you to the Brownish Bomber and Angus. Thank you very much to Hugh, who has upgraded their pledge to $13.12. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know about that, then you should keep listening to this show. And a huge, enormous shout out to Lachlan, who has been a staunch supporter of this show from day one and who just upgraded to our shadowy financier Patreon tier, our first and only shadowy financier.
So he gets to control us from the background. So if we start, you know, advocating, more fossil fuel burning or lower taxes or whatever, that's just our strings being pulled. You know, we're marionettes for the shadowy financiers. So if you would like to pull our strings, you can hop on
Patreon.
If you
hear any pro-magma lobby stuff going on the show, please
know that
it's down to the funding. And there was one other very special little bit of support that we got this week that we wanted to talk about.
This is a beautiful handcrafted gift from friend, confidant, and member of my inner sanctum, Steph Westwood, who's also a patron and long-term hardcore fan of the show. So thank you very much, Steph. And this is a beautiful handcrafted poster of our mascot, the Snacky Toast Boy, who really needs a name. Snacker Boy? I don't know. We'll work on it. It's a communist...
I've been trying to keep the toast gender neutral, but we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
The toast.
Snacker Pal. The toast is this like communist propaganda style thing. The toast is in like the rising sun, and underneath it in big red font, it says, keep on stacking in the free world. And there's a red flag waving that says crunch, crunch. So I'll hold that up to the microphone so listeners can hear it, but we'll also post photos on the Facebook page. But thank you very much, Steph. It's gorgeous and we love it.
We love you. That's huge. I think it's the first piece of fan art that we've gotten. We've definitely gotten
fan memes. Yes.
Shouts to Chris Ritchie. But
something about the physical paper just makes it so
like
much more.
Painted. You know, who paints anymore?
Yeah.
Respect. Cool. All right. So let's play the cheesiest of all of our stings. Hey, man, I got some more beers.
Oh, I don't know if I can drink anymore. I'm feeling kind
of
sick.
No, come on. We're having another round of Coronas. That's right. It's Corona Town.
Johnny.
Jack. I mean, you see, never mind. I think, well, maybe I'm just thinking that's
we did watch it together, but I only remember the very last scene where he says, "That's Chinatown." Jack, apparently. So maybe I don't remember. Anyway, let's move on.
It's not a good joke because racists are trying to call it the China virus. Yes. So we retract that bit and apologize for it.
Now onto the news about Corona.
Yes. Look, there's always way too much shit to keep up with. The news is coming so thick and fast. It seems every single day the government is announcing some new, absolutely unprecedented thing.
Yeah.
So we're not going to get into a huge amount of detail pulling all the new developments apart, but we just wanted to kind of, I guess, just briefly cover some of the major developments.
Yep. So one thing that I wanted to mention is that the curve appears to be flattening slightly. So, you know, we've been doing all this social distancing, and the purpose of that is so-called flatten the curve. And the point of that is to mean that the hospitals aren't overwhelmed with cases all at once, so that they have to, like, decide who gets treatment, basically. And it appears that that is working somewhat. And if you look at the graphs of trends of countries around the world, Australia is perfectly halfway between the countries that have been, like, doing a really good job, like Singapore, and the ones that have been doing a terrible job, like the US. And so that seems to be moving in approximately the right direction, which is good news.
Definitely. A couple of other things that have happened this week. The government has announced that childcare is now going to be free. So
for people who are still working, and especially medical professionals. Yeah.
Yes, specifically. So that's definitely interesting. Scott Morrison has told international students to fuck off and go home unless they are doing something that he deems useful.
Mm-hmm.
So that is cool. real estate agents have been telling people to dip into their super in order to pay their rent, which is illegal. And now ASIC has stepped in and been very clear that this is illegal. It's illegal to offer financial advice if you are not a licensed financial advisor.
I think it's funny that that's why it's illegal. It makes perfect sense, but like, it's funny that this isn't like a new emergency law that's brought in because of this like heightened tension between renters and landlords to like prevent the landlords from like screwing people. It's just like, no, you can take their super, you just can't tell them to withdraw it or encourage them to do so because it's financial advice.
I mean, that's why the government gave everybody the ability to withdraw their super. I think it was one of the earlier things they did.
Yeah.
Kind of when they were we can just do our normal neoliberal tactics and tell people to just spend their own retirement money in order to pay their rent. Great feeling funding someone else's retirement money with your own.
Yep.
Everybody loves that. Elsewhere, a whole bunch of new police powers have been brought in, basically to try and keep people off the streets because people aren't following government directions, and there's a lot of conversation around the government directions being extremely unclear and differing from state to state, and why aren't I allowed to sit on a park bench but people can still go and attend church and there might be 1,000 people in that building. And the other thing to note about these laws is that they are basically completely down to police discretion in many cases. And
heavy
that is the kind of
inverted
issue.
Commas around discretion, because as we've seen, like, surprising literally no one, that discretion is being used to target already vulnerable populations and like the people that cops were already picking on. There's been disabled people and homeless people and stuff being charged. As far as I know, no businessmen have been charged with the fine of like being out in public while Corona's happening. So,
well, they're keeping the economy running, Noon. So,
that makes
perfect
sense.
Going to stop them going about their very important daily business
crashing the stock market? Yeah.
So the one other thing that I wanted to talk about, with regards to Corona, before we get into our First Nations story, which is also Corona related, was when we first started talking about the government interventions being introduced to try and introduce a bit more of a social safety net, one of the things that we heard about when they were introducing the new job seeker payment was that they were going to have two different levels of welfare, basically, for the
people who were
already unemployed, and then the deserving unemployed who only lost their jobs because of a global pandemic. And then they just doubled the job seeker rate for everybody, and it looked like we were wrong about that. Or the information that we'd gotten had been wrong.
Whatever. Well, they changed their mind.
However you want to put it. Yes. And now it looks like they've changed their mind again, and there actually is going to be two different levels of welfare. Because they've introduced this new thing called JobKeeper, which is just...
Ugh, someone was so proud of that.
The name itself is disgusting. And so this is basically a flat payment of $1,500 a fortnight. So more than is more than the already doubled job seeker payment. Mm-hmm. So $1,500 a fortnight represents, I think, roughly 70% of the median wage. And this is a payment that is going to go to employers who are supposed to then pass it on to their employees to keep them in a job, even if they don't have revenue coming through the business.
And this has actually been backdated so that a lot of people who were already fired or stood down before this announcement came out will be eligible for it. So that's good news for a bunch of people who were retrenched or fired or whatever, that they will be eligible for this JobKeeper payment. Yeah.
Yeah, it's and like as with all of these things, it is muddy. That, you know, a lot of these things are getting announced before they're being properly legislated. And there is confusion about who is eligible and how it's going to be delivered and stuff. How are businesses who are not bringing in any money going to be able to pass this on to their employees if they don't have any cash in the bank? And this money is not supposed to be coming for at least another month to businesses themselves. But this represents, I think, two different levels of welfare. They're calling it JobKeeper, and it's supposed to be, you know, keeping people in employment. But I definitely think that this is part of a strategy to try and keep people off Centrelink and keep the unemployment figures down, because these people technically are not being entered into the welfare system.
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of want to push back on you a little bit about it being two different payments. I mean, it is, and it's a different rate or whatever, but like the thing that we were outraged about was the like categorization of scum and deserving, as we were kind of saying before, of like the people who are unemployed for no good reason versus the ones who are employed because of unemployed because of corona. And I think that's more kind of fundamentally unfair than having two different tracks of welfare. And like that existed, we've always had different types of welfare. You know, there's disability support and Newstart, or there's youth allowance and Ausstudy or whatever. And now they've all kind of been rolled in together. So that's sort of a different, like that's no longer the case. But like, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong about having different people who are in different sort of like categories receiving different types and amounts of welfare. And like, obviously, I think a UBI is a good idea, which might mean that that wasn't necessary, but we're not at that situation yet. So I don't think it's a huge deal. And I do think you're absolutely right about it being they've finagled this kind of like different type of arrangement where people don't get put on the books as unemployed, and where this is going to then keep a bunch of insolvent businesses afloat for another quarter so that they can report that on their like fucking employment stats or business stats and so on. It's very self-serving. It's not like fundamentally there to help the people who are suffering in the coronavirus situation. But I also don't think there's anything like super fundamentally wrong about a multi-pronged welfare approach or whatever. Like, yeah.
I mean, I guess I disagree in the sense that like this is, as we've discussed with the previous theoretical gap in the job seeker payments, that this is an implicit acknowledgement that it was not enough to live on.
Yeah,
that if you are a worker, that you do, you know, you need $1,500 a week. And so, yeah, I think that's inherently pretty problematic.
That's true.
But look, having said all this and having acknowledged that this is, I believe first and foremost, definitely a measure designed to keep the economy looking good before it's supposed to help people, it will still help a number of people.
Yes. Yeah.
But look, we'll, again, with all of these measures, we're going to have to wait and see exactly what they look like when they are properly rolled out.
Yeah,
because so it's kind of too early to tell at this stage. So, yeah, I think that's probably enough on government activity around coronavirus. You know, we live in very fucking interesting political times.
Yeah,
truly. So in terms of our First Nations story this week, I just wanted to draw attention to a press release that was made by the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Legal Service, basically calling for amnesty for prisoners.
Mm.
So it's something that we haven't touched on, I don't think, in the show so far.
About coronavirus in prisons.
Yeah, but obviously prisons are and a fucking awful place to be on a regular day, but in terms of a global pandemic, an absolute like hotbed of contagion. And a number of, it's an excuse, I think, for a lot of prisons to crack down basically on the already extremely limited freedoms of the people that are incarcerated there.
I was going to say, as we've seen with the police or whatever, and as you said very succinctly, I think it was last week, that this whole pandemic is just re-emphasizing all of the cracks that the failures of our society and the people who are already being failed by our various systems and so on, and it's exaggerating and exacerbating that. And Aboriginal people in prisons is that it's the epitome of a targeted minority.
Absolutely. So some of the strategies that prisons have been employing is putting people in isolation, within the prison, solitary confinement, which is deeply, deeply, deeply damaging to mental health. Like, it sends people fucking insane.
Yeah.
It's really, really, really awful. And to do it to people, under the pretext of it being for their own safety.
Totally. Is not so even fucking like the perverted. Punishment that we decided they deserved. As a court system or whatever.
The carceral system, which is obviously already extremely biased and racist, has already imposed on these people.
I'm pretty sure
they've also stopped. Go on.
I was going to say days spent in solitary count as 2 or 3 days for your sentence if you weren't sentenced to solitary, but it's not
worth
it. It's basically not worth it, I think. You say, it sends people insane and like is cruel and inhumane torture. So and much better would be to let them out, because most of them have been charged with complete bullshit. So
exactly. And the other thing to note is that family visits have been stopped as well in a lot of prisons. And some of these measures, obviously, I'm not saying that we don't need, that there isn't a sort of common sense motivation behind some of these measures, but this is not the way to go about it. And I just wanted to read a little bit from this press release from the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Legal Service. So they say, "We, the Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander Legal Service, are calling for national leadership from Prime Minister, Attorney General, and all levels of state and territory government to take immediate action to protect Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in prison, including early release. Most of our people in prison have chronic health issues and are living with disability. They are most at risk. With the overrepresentation of our people in prison, our lives are on the line. People in prison are extremely vulnerable to COVID-19. This is why we are calling for immediate early release, particularly people who are on remand, women who are victims of family violence and sentenced for lesser offences like fines and public order offences, young people, and those most at risk of transmitting COVID-19, like elderly and people with health conditions. Mm. At all costs, we must prevent any Aboriginal deaths in custody from COVID-19.
Yeah.
Authorities must be transparent and avoid blanket lockdowns or solitary confinement, especially for young people."
Yep, it's really good. I hope some notice is taken.
As you kind of pointed out, Noon, and that they make the point here as well, that there's so many people who are in prison on absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
Like parking tickets. Unpaid parking tickets. And imagine being in prison in the middle of a pandemic because you didn't pay a parking ticket. Like,
we've covered a lot of stories of unjust incarceration of Aboriginal people, and especially women, and deaths in custody. And I'm thinking especially of Joyce Clark, I think it was, who was asleep on a train and was then imprisoned and killed for being asleep on a train. And like, it was public drunkenness or whatever was the charge. But like, there's so many people in prison on similar kinds of bullshit that just shouldn't be there, and are now even further endangered, and are being, like, as you say, like tortured and psychologically abused because they're in this shitty situation that they don't deserve to be in. So anyway,
I think you might... it was Tanya Day.
I'm sorry.
Joyce Clark was a separate case.
My mistake, I'm sorry.
Deaths in custody, look, hopefully some notice is taken of that. Obviously, this is the kind of thing that wouldn't even be on the cards in a regular situation, but we've seen the government take a lot of steps that we never thought that they would have touched with a 10-foot pole in other circumstances. This, I would be extremely fucking surprised if they showed any kind of leniency to people.
Anyone in prison.
Anyone in prison. But at this stage...
Here's hoping.
Yeah, well, look, absolutely, it's, you know, it. We can't say that it's impossible.
Yep.
Because, yeah, unprecedented things are happening. All right, cool. Now it's time for...
It was the best of
takes.
It was the blurst of
takes.
You stupid monkey!
Yeah, and so this week we have an impressively bad take that somehow I agree with. Like, it's not that the content of it is bad. It's just the sheer, I want a word like hypocrisy, but like much stronger. But I'll tell you about it, listeners. So this is a screed from Andrew Bolt. It is actually on the 1st of April, which makes me wonder. It could be a joke, but I doubt it. Somehow I feel like Andrew Bolt doesn't have the self-awareness to do this as a joke. So I'll just read you the first couple of lines of this article. On the Bolt Report at Sky at 7 p.m., still just 20 deaths, the latest 95 years old. What's the human cost of locking up everyone rather than detaining the infectious and protecting the old? So that's a pretty awful take, but here's where it gets truly spicy. And have we lost our heart trying to turn away a ship? Have we lost our mind banning couples from visiting each other? And why a pay rise for public servants? Plus, can we blame Chinese companies for looting Australian shops when the crisis was worst in China? Wow. Wow, Andrew Bolt getting mad about us turning away a ship.
Has Australia lost its way? Is this what the country that we have become? Turning boats away?
Ugh. It's
fucking hell.
Yeah. And you know,
the lack of fucking self-awareness required to write this kind of shit.
The way that you can tell it's not a April Fool's joke is he's also complaining about a pay rise for public servants. Like, this is clearly, he just honestly is like, that was a ship full of wealthy, old, white people, and just because they all have coronavirus and is going to completely destroy our country by infecting thousands of people, we're going to heartlessly turn them away?
Turn them away? And then he also dips into, also, just flagging, I'm going to be racist later in the show, so stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
Which, classic Bolt. The most read columnist in Australia. So that's very cool.
Oh, yeah.
We also, like, on the cruise ship thing, we haven't talked about the Ruby Princess very much. I think we mentioned it in passing one time to basically say what Andrew did, but the opposite, which is, of course, Border Force hasn't stepped in to quarantine all of these rich white retirees.
Yeah.
And instead have let them, like, run amok in the fucking community, putting their grubby hands all over the toilet paper. But there's been rumblings, and it's hard to say how much of this is bullshit, but there have been lots of rumblings on Twitter about Liberal Party, like high up figures in the Liberal Party being directly involved with the decision to let those people off the ship without,
right,
like, being
protected. I haven't heard about that. I know there's been a big shit fight between Border Force and the New South Wales Health Department about whose fault it was.
Yeah.
Who was meant to be controlling our borders? It must have been one of these agencies.
Toss a coin. Hard to say. But look, all I'm saying is I feel like there might be some new developments on that story to come.
Keep an eye on it.
Yeah. Okay, what do you got for us next, Noon?
Now we have
Shitpost of the Week.
And we've actually got two of these. So one is our sort of little special bonus category, Shitpost of the Week of our heart. Aww. This one goes to friend, confidant, member of our inner sanctum, Coot Coodle. One of the very first founding members of Ozpol Shitposting. Great meme creator. Excellent stuff, Coot.
The Coot content is few and far between, but when it comes...
She's trying to get off the social media, which, fair.
Prepare yourself. Yeah, oh, totally.
It's a shame for us, but fair.
If I had that many gorgeous chooks and such a lush garden, I know where I'd be.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be on Facebook.
Anyway, so this was on a post by Kieran Peake in Ozpol Shitposting, which you can join, listeners, if you're not already. You can go to facebook.com/groups/Ozpol Shitposting. And this was a tweet about stay-at-home rules and about how you're not allowed to visit partners, and then they changed their mind about whether or not you're allowed to visit partners who live in different houses and so on. That's kind of beside the point, but there's the context. So here's a comment that Coot left. Earlier today, the Victorian Premier declared Coot's boyfriend the absolute most hottest and unattainable person on the planet. Lisa Neville concurred that while he was, quote, very cute, the state could not sanction sleepovers. Later in the day, Chief Health Officer Brett Sutton declared boyfriends legal again, leading to stocks in boyfriends crashing and interest in seeing them tonight returning to average levels. I fucking love it. It's so good.
It's top shit. And later down that thread, do we have a little comment from one Jack
from
Odin?
The boyfriend? Yeah, yeah. So the Jack Odin replies, "Coot coodle, this increased volatility in the boyfriend sector is really having an effect on market confidence." And I made a meme of not stunks, and it's when COVID destroys the dating scene, not bunks.
Nice.
Yes. So anyway, thank you very much, Coot, for your cromulent content, as always.
Really got me. Really got me. So who is the official winner of Shitpost of the Week this week, Noon?
It's going, yet again, I think far and away, our most awarded shitposter, Chris Ritchie, winner of the inaugural Shitpost of the Week, and continuing strongly in the time in between. I think this might be number 4 or number 5.
It's getting up there.
So there were two, actually, and they were thematically linked. So listeners may have heard Daniel Andrews telling people to get your mates over and get on the beers. No, that was a joke. He was saying, don't do that. But there's been a bunch of edits. There was a great video, a remix of that conference of him saying, now we need people to take this seriously. Get on the beers. If everyone just gets on the beers, we can control this thing. Anyway, so Chris Ritchie did a mashup. One was Dan Andrews in, is it Mean Girls? Get in, loser. Yes. We're getting on the beers. And the other was an edit of that episode of The Simpsons where Nixon and Kennedy having a debate, and they pause to like, now a word from our sponsors, and Kennedy's going on about how good Duff Beer is, except instead of Kennedy going on about Duff Beer, it's Daniel Andrews saying, get your mates around and get on the beers, we need to take this seriously. Anyway, both very good.
And then Homer says, that man's never gotten on the beers in his life.
Yeah.
Or something to that effect. This is a video meme, by the way, so like, we're talking high effort.
Yeah, absolutely.
Points for effort is a big one in my books, you know? So, congratulations, Chris.
Thanks,
yet
Chris.
Another one for the pool room. Fantastic work.
So, going to bring us to the end of our news stories. And as Zach mentioned, there's this interview coming up with him and Lazy Susan. We originally planned this for a week where I was going to go away, but obviously that's not happened. But Zach and I decided that what with the whole internet situation, it was going to be too hard to do both of us interviewing Lazy at the same time. So I'm going to check out, and you guys are going to get an extra hour of bonus Zach and Lazy content. So I hope you really enjoy that. I really enjoyed the interview. It was very interesting, and there's some good shit in there. So I hope all of you enjoy it too.
Hey, everybody. I am here with a very special guest, Robbie Tanak, a.k.a. Lazy Susan, who I am going to let introduce himself.
Hi, hello everyone. It's me, Lazy Susan, drag sensation, probably the single most important artist of the 21st century. Lucky enough to be hearing me on this podcast. I also know Zach from a thousand quadrillion years ago when we both went to university together. And as you can tell, the fact that we're both on a podcast right now should tell you all that our lives are going very well.
Oh, absolutely. Both crushing it. I apologize if introducing you as Robbie. Is it Lazy that I'm talking to?
Oh, shit. Sorry. No, I mean, are we allowed to swear? We're allowed to swear. Of course we're allowed to swear.
You are definitely allowed to swear. I mean, we've had comments from people saying, please swear less, but I tend to disregard them.
Oh, this is the thing. Like, I do, like, I swear a lot, and then I also use the pejorative F word for homosexual men a lot.
Well, I think that you are allowed to do that, especially given what we've got on the roster. But I'll just pop in a little content warning. It'll be fine.
I want you all to know that when I say it, I'm only talking about how much I truly do hate myself and not any other homosexuals.
tell us a bit about what Lazy does.
Okay, so, I mean, at the moment, because we are currently in quarantine, Lazy Susan does about Sweet Jackal. But I'm normally a Melbourne drag queen who runs around with my cohort, my girl group, not my girl group, the girl group that I'm a part of, the Beastie Girls. which features Zelda Moon and Benign Girl. And these shady bitches will not be listening to this podcast, because even if I send them a link, they'll be like, yeah, no, babe, I listened. It's fine. I loved you. But yeah, so we kind of do drag. We do kind of do drag. We are not the most beautiful queens you've ever seen, but we do kind of do it. But we get around a bit, and we've had a bit of success prior to the first stages of the apocalypse. We had done some, we'd done an ad for Mecca. We had been at the NGV for the opening of the Keith Haring and Jean-Michel Basquiat show, which was a fabulous and hilarious night.
Yes, I saw the hype video for that with the three of you running around dry humping the furniture in the lobby of the Arts Center, which was that to spider bait. Fucking, that was great.
It was a fabulous time, and that was the second time that the NGV made the mistake of inviting us back to perform.
they never learn.
Yeah, well, no, honestly, there's a funny story there. But yes, it was very before all these institutions closed. We were starting to have a bit of success as kind of local Melbourne horrors, dysfunctional.
Yeah, I mean, you host nights around town, various different kinds of shows and performances. You did a show at the Fringe in Melbourne towards the end of last year, which was great.
Yes, we did a drag show, the game show, which Zach was kind enough to come and film for us, which we're going to be releasing very soon onto the internet, which is why we're applying for small, urgent funding from the local government. So we're going to ask for money and try and get you, Emmett Lewis, and myself some coins to put this out onto the internet.
Fantastic. Yeah, for people who don't know Lazy and the Beastie Girls, I highly recommend going and checking out the promo video for the Fringe show, drag show, the game show, which before I watched it, it never twigged for me how perfectly homophobe and promo code rhyme. But it was just one of those things that fell into place, and I was like, I can't believe I've never heard that before. That is just, it was a serendipitous moment. Absolutely beautiful.
We are artists. We are artists. We are very important artists.
You are artists, and you're multimedia, multidimensional artists. I mean, obviously, drag performance is your primary mode of performance, and I'll talk a little bit later about the first time I saw you, because it was transcendental for me. But before we get onto that, I wanted to talk about your Big Bank campaign. Let's call it a campaign. Because normally on the show, we talk about politics and we talk about memes that are about politics. Mm. And when you put out your Big Bank video and pictures, I made a mental note to myself, I have to give this shit post of the week. And then I completely forgot to do it.
Oh!
I know. Dreadful. But look, I'm making up for it now. I'm doing what I can. I'll just give a brief bit of background about this. So it was around the time of, it was just in the lead up to the Sydney Mardi Gras earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
And people might remember that ANZ put out this campaign that rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way. So it had a few different components, all of which were extremely wrong-headed. The sort of flagship piece was a video of members of the LGBTQIA+ community saying slurs down the barrel of the camera for like a full minute, which a lot of people found sort of was like, why are you putting a whole bunch of slurs on my Twitter timeline when I'm supposed to be celebrating?
Correct. It was a very confusing time.
No, it didn't go down super well.
To give you a little bit more context, because in my day life, my day work, which thankfully is still intact until after this podcast comes out and they find out that I've been gossiping, but I work in advertising. If you're in advertising, you generally have like you find out about these campaigns very quickly, and everyone's eyes are on them extremely quickly. Every year there is the ANZ ad is the kind of the Mardi Gras ANZ collaboration, because they're an official sponsor of the Mardi Gras parade, is like a huge moment in advertising because their ads tend to win massive amounts of awards at like at these huge industry awards. Like they have the Cannes Awards for advertising and all this sort of stuff. So it is like this massive moment. And because advertising in the last decade has really shifted towards making a social difference and doing things that are important for the world.
You can't see the scare quotes.
But yeah, they are there. These are finger quotes that you'll never hear, but you know they're here. But yeah, so every opportunity that a brand or company has to kind of jump onto like queer issues is one that they're very excited to take, and in particular that their advertising agencies are very excited to make. There's a Melbourne advertising agency that does all of ANZ's work. It's TBWA, or you can search that yourself. And last year they did an okay job of what is normally a bit of a shit fight of different brands to try and do interesting stuff. But this year was the year that they really like went ham. They decided that they were like close enough to queer people to now suddenly get a pass to say all these words that, you know, that we love to say to each other. And the people love to yell at us outside
of
cars.
We're one of you. We're one of you. See, we've reclaimed it along with you.
We're helping.
So there was also the online component to this campaign. And this, I'd forgotten about this element of it, that they put out an extension for the Chrome browser called the Hurt Blocker.
Well,
which is just so like someone sitting in the bowels of an advertising agency sweating over a piece of paper and then just like a light bulb goes off and like, the Hurt Blocker, we have to make this happen. Which is an extension that you add onto Chrome and basically censors homophobic or queerphobic language by putting little like rainbow and unicorn emojis in front of it.
It is stunning. And I would like you to know that since the release of that ad, homophobia is now gone. So I would stop laughing if
that.
I was you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No.
Like, respect hardly anyone is in the streets. Yeah. Like all the gays have been raptured to their homes. Everyone's safe.
All of the yelling is being done by cops at people sitting in parks, which is how it should be. I think we can all agree.
I cannot wait to get yelled at a cop for just trying to take a nice little walk in the forest. I'm waiting. I'm excited.
So maybe I'll play the Thank Bank ad that you did.
Oh, yes. Okay. So just, for a little bit of context.
Please go.
So essentially ANZ releases this ad in the lead up to Mardi Gras where it gets like a whole bunch of very innocent queer people who do not deserve. I want to couch all of this in saying that the people who appear in this ad are completely without fault and like are all just trying to get that coin, honey. And from what I've heard, were paid very 100%. Well to appear in this ad. To use queer slurs and talk about them in the camera about times that they'd experienced them. So essentially talk about some of their trauma that they've picked up as queer people, which is absolutely their right and their place to do and absolutely their place to monetize and take money from, which I 100% give them the coin. And then ANZ decided that it was time to take these people's stories and turn them into an ad for their delicious little bank. And then... me and my girl group could not resist. We decided that it was time because we'd seen a lot of hate out there towards this bank in the wake of this ad. And so we decided to step in and defend the banks. And that's what you're about to hear.
All right. I'm going to play it now. Just like for everybody who hasn't seen the original video, this is an absolutely fucking impeccable like satire of it. Like it is shot for shot. They've got the same fucking font going on. It's really well done.
So tell me what your name is.
My name is
Big Bank.
Big Bank.
Big Bank.
Big Bank.
Big Four.
Massive Bank.
My name is Land Grabber.
Predatory Lender.
Greedy Pigs.
Coal Guzzler.
Capitalist Oligarchy.
Land Grabber.
Loan Shark.
Tax haven.
They say that
I'm a faceless corporation.
They say a giant multinational bank can't be a gay person.
Liberal Party donor.
Greedy bastards.
Greedy pig.
Ham fister.
Boomer. Pink washer.
Pink washer. What do you mean the faggots didn't like it? Well, maybe there's a women's football league we can do something with.
And the text at the end there reads, "We're proud to continue supporting ourselves, the fossil fuel industry, the Liberal Party, and the queers. Hashtag thank bank."
Finally we can thank the banks.
They're given the credit they deserve.
Absolutely. You know, it's really funny because you start to, like, in Mardi Gras every year is a bit of a clusterfuck. It weirdly really affects me every time when I see it, because it has become essentially like a giant ad scroll, and I'm not going to pretend like I'm not part of that, because that's what my day job is. But it's really sad what's happened to this event, and the fact that they've monetized so much of it, and what should essentially be like people walking down the street, and it shouldn't be ticketed, and it shouldn't be, you know, attracting like massive pop stars, and it shouldn't, you know, do all of these things, but they've turned it into like Disneyland Presents. But the thing that kind of struck me most is that in the parade, they didn't cover it on SBS when the ANZ float went past, but there was like booze in the crowd. So it went far enough that, like, even though you kind of lose faith in these things, like, people are still switched on enough to be like, yeah, like, that's too much. Fuck those guys.
For sure. I mean, this sort of, as you say, like, it's a general shift across the spectrum in marketing to co-opt these kind of socially progressive messages, because they understand that that is now what starts to sell. Of course, you can't trust a single word that comes out of these corporations' mouths, because, as you've pointed out very succinctly and artistically in your video, and as I am now going to laboriously unpack and remove any semblance of humor from, these are massive corporations that are still exploiting people around the world, and are part of oppressive systems that, you know, is particularly pertinent in this case, oppress queer people as well as people of all stripes, to which, you know, queer people belong to many different communities as well. So it's like extremely disingenuous to try and co-opt the facade of queer allyship whilst with your other hand still continuing to support fossil fuel mining, for example.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, that's so, it. I mean, queer people continue to be human beings that are alive. And so when you have companies that are fisting the future of humanity, it does kind of present a little bit of a conflict of interest.
Yes. As a human, I object to what you do.
Exactly. I mean, I feel like it's like the weird thing that we haven't been able to all rally around is that all of these companies are trying to actually kill you and your children. So if you believe in you existing, perhaps this is something you should be against.
And, you know, especially maybe they shouldn't be taking part in events that are founded in protest.
Well, yes. I mean, the fact that the Sydney police walk in that parade is an absolute obscenity to me. Like, it is crazy.
Oh, it's absurd. I mean, considering that at the first Mardi Gras, the marchers were beaten up by the cops and thrown in jail.
And like, honey, like, listen, like, that not even the first. Like, my friends are event organizers. They run a queer party, and they take it up to Sydney for Mardi Gras. And this year's Mardi Gras, there was unfortunately two overdoses, but thankfully they organized medics on site, which is fabulous, which means that they were able to call the ambulance immediately and get these men who'd overdosed on G out of the building and to a hospital where they could be getting some treatment. But if you order two ambulances at once, it triggers a call to the police. And so the police came along and immediately told the venue that if they did not get rid of the 800 people, queer men predominantly, who were in the building in just their underwear or thongs, harnesses, etc., because it was it's a bit of a sex on site sort of party, that if they didn't get them out immediately, they would lose their license. So in a kind of echo of the Mardi Gras of times gone by, they were taking 800 men who might have just dropped on, just taking a goog or whatever, out of a safe contained space with a medic and into the streets of Sydney at 2 in the morning. And shut down this queer party. And, of course, the venue didn't have a leg to stand on because they couldn't lose their license. But, immediately the bouncers and the police turned into our worst enemies and, were pushing people out of the building without their clothes, without their wallets, without their phones. So it's, sort of oppression is, continuing in Sydney mainly, very, very visually. But, I mean, obviously in Melbourne here too, but, it is an unyielding. So it's if it was, specifically kept in 1973 or, if it was that we had these moments in the past, yeah, maybe there is time to rehab, after the tasty riot, that we had with the police, maybe there is time to get them involved in the parade, but these motherfuckers are still doing this shit on the daily. It doesn't stop. So it's when y'all can figure out your fucking attitude towards us during this massive, massive boon for your city that brings so much money in, which is what y'all care about, maybe you can leave our parties alone instead of getting, aggressive towards them.
Well said. We have a saying here on Elspel Ship Post, again, that is ACAB. yeah. Couldn't, it is, deeply fucked.
Yes.
Deeply fucked.
It is deeply fucked. But, this is it is an interesting question because as a drag queen, you have to really start questioning very early on whose money you want to take. And so, full disclosure, the Beastie Girls, as it stands, have taken money from company, institutions like the National Gallery of Victoria, who have a questionable kind of ethics as far as just the kind of general colonialism and also their affiliation with their security company that works at one of our offsite island detention camps. And then we've also taken money from Spotlight, which is a fabric company that definitely is just taking the best advantage of Bangladeshi sweat camps to make their fabrics. We've also taken money from Mecca, which, does support brands and products that use, animal tested products. But you do have to figure out where, what you will say no to, because all of those things were on our mind when we took that money, because we do like getting paid and we do like having money and getting these exciting gigs, but we do have to kind of decide at what point and at what rate we're going to sell out our ethics.
I mean, isn't that just daily life under capitalism? Regardless of what you do.
It is, and it is. So the things that we have said no to were BMW, which we were I'm sorry, we can't be involved. Because, with fabric and with makeup, these are brands and things that we use in our everyday life.
Sure.
So we do, we do say, I could actually see myself recommending these things. Because we do use them in the art of drag. But with things like a giant automotive company, that's just not something that's interesting to us. But I don't begrudge any queens that do take that money, because I understand how hard it is to ever get paid to do this job.
No doubt. But yeah, as you say, it's a deeply complicated question. And, Mardi Gras is this sort of example of what happens when you just kind of, I guess you aspire to that mainstream appeal. You can't turn down that bank money. You can't tell the Liberal Party, no, you can't have a float. And then when you have queer protesters protesting the Liberal float, you can't tell the cops, no, you can't eject these queer people from this queer parade.
So dark.
It's a slippery slope. But look, that's, capitalism is extremely good at absorbing and regurgitating objections to its own systems and existence. That's why it's so resilient.
It's a self-monitoring sort of thing. But, you know, this is like, every year when Midsummer rolls around, I'm like, oh, like Midsummer, like the Melbourne version of kind of Mardi Gras, has been protected in a lot of ways. It does have a brand presence, but the brand presence is contained within like a small area. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the parade is almost entirely brand free, which is fantastic. And I think in a lot of ways, Melbourne is set up a little bit better because we have, there's a culture of community involvement in the arts that exists here in Melbourne that we're lucky to have that protects us from a lot of the commercialization that Mardi Gras has gotten. And it means that, you know, things like Midsummer will never be as huge or as exciting or as razzle-dazzle as Mardi Gras, which is, like, when you're there, it's like being in Vegas. It's like, you know, just these stunning bright lights and everything, and it's all so glossy and clean that you're like, I wish every day, you know, you forget about it for a second, but then you remember.
Is that Cher hanging out with
Malcolm? Yes!
Wow!
I mean, that's it. I mean, poor Cher. Poor woman.
She couldn't have known.
She literally, like, she tweeted after the fact and was just like, I'm sorry, I didn't realize this guy was an asshole. Like, I take it back. And I think that is like, listen, you're not going to know every single person you stand next to when you're just getting asked for a photo. But, goddamn, I love that she, like, posted a retraction and was just like, you know, fuck this guy.
Oh, I mean, a lot of love for Cher. Who doesn't have at least a little bit?
I mean, a true icon. I don't know whether Dua Lipa should have been the pick for this year.
I found that weird.
It was like, so strange.
I mean, so strange. I don't know much. I don't know anything about, like, I don't know about her sexuality or whatever, but I don't understand it to be, like, you know, part of her persona. Is some gay people liking your song all the criteria that is needed?
Well, that's it. I mean, I think it's just like it is, but it needs to be compounded by time and pressure, which is how you end up with Cher.
Yes.
So it's like if it is 40 years.
True, no, you're right.
And you've always been an advocate, then fine, yes. And also, you know, you've always like supported your trans child. But yeah, Dua, you've props. Got some while. You got to keep going before you get my vote. Even though people are deciding after the release of her recent album that she is the queen of the gays.
Right. Oh, okay. Wow. I'm behind the times. Yeah. I mean,
Don't worry about that. I'm trying to quash it as we speak. It's just bullshit.
Oh. Okay. Can I still listen to New Rules? Because it still bangs, honestly.
Listen, you know, Dua Lipa has some absolute, even on the new album, which is not as good as her previous work. You're going to get letters. I'm so sorry. but even on the new album, which is not as good as her previous album, she still has bops. But listen, she ain't her majesty yet. She's not even in the royal court, you know. She's got to work her way up.
Coronation has not yet happened. I highly doubt we'll get letters. I'll be surprised if more than like 5 people who listen to this show know who Dua Lipa is, honestly.
Oh, you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised. But
I guess we'll find out. If you know who Dua Lipa is,
please
write into the show, please. AusPostSnackPod@gmail.com. Send us a little letter.
And please don't send me anthrax in the mail because I can't have that again.
No. But 3 times is more than enough.
3 times, absolutely not. And like, what do you do with anthrax once you have it? You know, like it's you can't regain.
You only need so much.
The Charlie XCX was asked by Grindr to do a DJ set on their Instagram, and she went up, and it was such a good set, and it was exactly what quarantine needed, and that is that is the work of not a queen, but just a Lord and Savior.
That's a real allyship right there.
That's okay. Right.
I find her music unlistenably bland, but I am glad that you are enjoying it.
Listen, I encourage you to listen to Vroom Vroom. It is so good. yeah, it's fabulous. It is absolutely the sort of stuff you want to listen to when you are just absolutely out of your mind on K.
Oh, I mean, sounds great. I am noting it down.
Please. And if you listeners at home like Charlie XCX, and in particular her work on the Grindr Instagram feed, please let me know.
Excellent. So, earlier in the show, I promised that I would talk about the first time that I saw you perform as Lazy Susan. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, Robbie and I knew we were friends in film school. But the first time that I saw him perform drag was at a drag competition. It was kind of like, aspiring to be a local drag race, basically.
How dare you?
I think it was called...
Dragnet?
I apologize. Dragnet. Thank you.
Got the now defunct Dragnet, which was the largest competition in Melbourne, in Victoria.
The Southern Hemisphere, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, thank you. Yes, thank you. Yes.
but yeah, when I first mentioned to Noon that I wanted to get you on the show, and we were just chatting about what to ask you, and he is a huge RuPaul fan, which I'm not really. I've seen maybe like a few episodes of All Stars here and there, and I go to the finale when it happens because that's always a lot of fun to watch.
You're a disappointment.
I know. I've tried. I just don't have the stomach for reality TV in general.
Very dare you? We'll get back to that. We're circling back to that.
Don't worry. We're coming back around. The arc of the universe bends towards RuPaul, and we're on the journey. So
no, I just have a very strong case to make for reality television, but we'll put a pin in that. Go on. I'm so sorry.
Maybe that could be a bonus episode. so Noon was like, maybe ask Lazy like what scenes she likes to do. What are some of her favorite scenes? And I was like, I'm not sure if she like has exactly scenes, but instead of putting you through the rigmarole of having to explain your amazing, extravagant performances, I thought I'd do it for you. One is always fucking, it's always stuck with me. So the first time I saw Lazy Susan perform was in a heat at Dragnet. So there were four performers in this heat who were all competing for a chance to go into the next round. And I think Lazy was first from memory. And I was there with a friend, confidant, and member of my inner sanctum, Emmett, who is also a patron of this show. Mm-hmm. And we'll come back to Emmett later. and Lazy came out in this weird sort of paper mache blob that covered her entire body from the waist up, basically. And there was this voiceover talking about the drag mother and the drag life cycle and how a baby drag queen is born. And the lights are very low. And the drag mother kind of staggers out this weird, misshapen, weirdly painted blob. And then this papier-mâché egg, like, cracks open and silly strings starts shooting out all over the crowd. And arms start to appear, and Lazy is like born from the inside of the drag mother shell. The shell like falls away, cracks, falls to the ground, and Lazy emerges, and then does a full lip sync of "I'm Still Breathing" by Sia. So it was like an incredible piece of just like performance art to begin with. But the other thing about that show was that it was right after the shooting in Orlando, the Pulse nightclub. And so the night became a bit of a fundraiser for the people who had survived that attack. And this piece that you did started so kind of like weird and abstract. And then as you performed the Seer, it became like so emotional. And it was, you know, "I'm Still Breathing." It was this sort of cry of like, "I'm still here and you can't fucking get rid of me and you can't put me down." And the whole room just like, there were tears, and it was just such an incredible roller coaster to go through in like 5 minutes. And I've never forgotten that performance. It was like incredible. So that was the first time that I saw Lazy perform, and I just wanted to give you a little bit of a taste. Sorry for gushing.
Bless your heart. I mean, that's very sweet of you. It was, just to clarify, all of you Charlie XCX and Dua Lipa fans in the audience who are also big fans of Sia, the song was actually "Alive."
Alive? Is that not? Was I saying
"I'm Still Breathing" is one of the lyrics? You're doing very well.
I have like outed myself as so depressingly heterosexual many times during this conversation.
Old man. Yeah, no, listen, it's fine.
I believe she's a pop artist.
I've heard of her.
Yeah, you know, she's got the hair.
Do you know what, though? That was a fucked up night. Yeah, go on, sorry.
Well, it was, and this is where I wanted to go. So, you know, we've already talked about capitalism and the relationship between queerness and capitalism, and obviously you have a solid anti-capitalist ethic and progressive politics, and that is why we're having you on the show.
Wait, what? You don't have your enemies on your show?
Not yet.
How else do you out them and punish
them?
We're
working on Andrew Bolt's son. He's got a podcast called
Shut Up.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. And I keep trolling him on Twitter, but he won't take the bait, but eventually he will.
Do you know what? You could just compile like various like clips of him speaking as a way in.
That's a great idea. Again,
go on, sorry.
Done.
Yes, I threw off your phone.
No, the other reason I wanted to tell that anecdote, it wasn't just to, you know, be a little fangirl, but also, I mean, it was partially that. But also because, as I mentioned, it was a heat, so there were three other performances. And after riding the high of Lazy's incredible opening performance, all of the other performance drag scenes that happened were just incredibly problematic. They were transphobic, they were racist, there was like a weird kind of brown face thing going on. And I mentioned I was there with my friend Emmett, and just watching his face fall as these transphobic things were said, and it was just so strange to see a friend of mine who had like really introduced me to the queer scene in general, you know, he was the one who had taken me to this show, and then watch him feel upset and unsafe and like excluded within this queer space was really, really strange to see. And I was just like, what the fuck is going on? And so I wanted to ask you what the fuck is going on, you know, in general, you know, just, and we mentioned RuPaul before, and there's kind of an ongoing, I guess, conversation about his political stances, especially in relationship to queerness, but also the way that Ru and his style of drag and his attitude towards queerness has kind of become this mainstream representative of what drag is and what it represents. And I have always seen you and the Beastie Girls and what you do as this kind of antidote to that, and that's why I love what you do. So I wanted to just kick off a conversation, I guess, yeah, sort of about the relationship between what you might call mainstream drag and what you guys do, and how you see yourself fitting in with that, and what you try to do with the Beastie Girls kind of in response to that. I know that's a lot to lay on your plate, but I'm sure you've got thoughts.
Well, I do. And I think my thinking around this has really changed. So on that night, I came backstage, and there was two backup dancers who were in niqabs, and the lead performer, who is a drag queen that I will not mention, but who I love very much, she was in a full burqa, and then she got up on stage and performed Lady Gaga's song Aura, which was initially called Burqa, about the beauty that exists beyond the burqa.
Did not know that she had done that song.
Yeah.
I mean, which will not surprise anybody, but still.
Yes, well, Lady Gaga never has had quite the ear for figuring out the nuance. But anyway, so she got up and did that show and stripped off out of the burqa into a sexy bikini, because that is what
God,
you do.
That's right. Yeah. It was very, I haven't seen Sex in the City 2, but apparently it was very Sex in the City 2.
Sex in the City 2, problematic queens, doing their most. Yes, absolutely. who could forget the scene where, beneath thousands of years of tradition was this year's summer collection, and all the women get out of their burqas and they all are wearing their Jimmy Choo's and gorgeous Gucci gowns. Stunning. Thank you, Darren Starr, for your hot take on the Middle East. So initially I was horrified, initially mortified, particularly because I did have friends coming in, and this was like my first show on the South Side. Now, to those of you who don't live in Melbourne, the South Side and the North Side used to be really two distinct factions of drag. One that kind of represented more traditionally left ideologies, and the other one that was a bit more kind of mainstream commercial drag, very much in the kind of Priscilla tradition. Over the ensuing weeks and months, as I got to know these women who work inside of this venue, which is now defunct, big shout out to the Greyhound Hotel, I kind of realized that as problematic as what was going on there was on stage, it was born out of an ignorance, and not just like, it wasn't like an ignorance that like... There's a kind of ignorance you can really go in and understand that my critique was built out of like being given the tools and, you know, having this university education and being surrounded by my parents who are both educators and both have been to university. And like, that's not to say that everyone that's been to university is suddenly like woke bays, but I'm just saying like, I was really critiquing them based on like a cultural elitism. That I realized I needed to loosen that standard in order to actually have engaged in interesting conversations with these people. And that's not like saying that I was going to go in there and educate them and teach them the ways, these savages, but like this kid that did that show, literally would have never encountered that conversation, would have never, on the night of the Orlando shooting when there was a lot of Islamophobia going around, would not have seen an issue in, like, donning a burqa and putting their backup dancers in niqab to say, oh, this might be something problematic is, because they come from a place where that is never discussed, where it's very homogenous white and, very... working class and like that sort of thing. But the point that they would never had access to this conversation. And, it just really wasn't fair of me to be like, you're a fucking like ignorant piece of shit. When this person was just like really lovely and really sweet. I mean, if you sat down and spoke to them for 5 seconds, you'd realize that they actually like didn't have a malicious bone in their body. And so like in drag is really like a melting pot, of different people from the entire kind of like class strata or whatever, like the kind of like people with different levels of cultural capital. And when you're all thrown in together, it's really easy to show how much of a piece of shit, snob, elitist prick you are because you find yourself judging people so quickly. But it's an art form that hasn't yet given way to cultural elitism because it was rejected. It's like a confection. It isn't like ballet, classical music, painting, like sculpture. It isn't yet entrenched in like a societally acceptable, like sort of you can go to university for it. So it still is pure and it's still an art form that's accessible to people from, you know, from everywhere and no matter who you are. So you find people in it who are using it to express their point of view on life. And you have to accept that sometimes there will be pieces that are problematic, but that's kind of what's exciting about drag is that you get to see everyone. You get to see points of view that you haven't encountered before. And you can go backstage and have a conversation about it. And there have been just some of the most horrendous, problematic, anti-woman, transphobic, homophobic, racist bullshit I've ever seen in my life. And that does get called out. But in some instances, you do have to kind of sit down and actually be able to engage in a conversation. And it does remind you of that. It's like, this person isn't the enemy. There are greater forces at work that are the enemy. This person was just in a place of ignorance. And so like that has been like the biggest learning lesson from my time in drag has been to not be such a fucking judgmental piece of shit.
I think it's that's a great lesson. Shows a lot of growth. I mean, this was like a number of years ago that we're talking as well.
Yeah. And it happens all the time. It really does. Sure. Yeah. And like, I mean, it's a really funny, one of the other things kind of around, conversations of gender identity and gender politics, are happening in different ways in different places. And so when you're backstage at these venues, the conversation is advanced, but it doesn't sound like the conversation you're used to. They're not using the same language and terminology, but it's all advancing towards the same thing, which is about, like, you know, like in venues like the Greyhound, which is now gone, there were like trans women on every night getting paid, being respected and being loved and adored by these crowds. But of course, yeah, like the language would never be used today that they were using to discuss like trans women or the trans women were using to discuss themselves. But that's just like a matter of translation, not a matter of hate.
For sure. Yeah, it's interesting. And then listening to you speak, I am getting the feeling that in fact that my question was kind of formed really, I guess, from a place of like, I don't know, I guess sort of flattening drag and being like, how if you're queer, then you must obviously be progressive and understand oppression and therefore have politics that perfectly mirror my own, what I have deemed to be the good politics. So even though you didn't stick the needle in there like you could have, which I appreciate, I definitely take your point that there's like the, you know, it's, as you say, there's something fantastic about the fact that it is such a super accessible art form and therefore is obviously going to contain an absolute multitude of perspectives and views and a number of different political perspectives as well, and not even necessarily be political. I've seen a lot of apolitical drag in my time.
Absolutely.
Which, I mean, as you say, it's all part of the fun that it's like, it's such a broad sort of form of expression.
It is, now that it's kind of become a bit more, like, commercialized, that is the one thing we have to fight against the most is kind of, well, not fight, but, like, kind of tread lightly around, is that now that we're now commercially viable and our weird little queer economy is bleeding into the real economy, we have to be very careful to protect our values.
Mm. Well, yeah, you've got that problem now of actually having to bump up against the forces of capital, where, you know, you, when you're small enough, you can kind of float under the radar if you're existing on drink coupons or whatever.
Oh, yes. And that, like, it is funny because in the world of drag, it is like such a, like, there's no, like, it is, it's all about the coin. Like, there's no mincing words. It's like, people are like, how do I get that coin? But it's like, and for the longest time, that is like, I can understand RuPaul in the way that RuPaul came up in a time where it was just not fucking cute or easy to be like a 6'4", like black drag queen, you know, working your way in the clubs, and particularly because she like started off so genderfuck. I would stage a much better defense of RuPaul and her questionable politics had I not just learnt that she is involved in the fracking industry.
Yeah, on her own land, like selling.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But I mean, that's it. It's like, but yeah, it's that transition from, you know, basically once you have enough money, then you at some point you cross over some kind of invisible line. And I'm not saying cancel RuPaul. As you say, I think that she deserves a huge amount of recognition for what she has done with her life and career and the way that she has put her body and herself on the line. But that obviously doesn't mean that we avoid these conversations about her attitudes towards trans people and her fracking on her own fucking land.
The fracking, like, you know, I got, you know, transphobia, fuck this bitch. But I mean, the fracking, mama, like, because you can change that destructive opinion and hopefully, like, reverse some of that damage. I feel like the fracking
can't unfrack land.
Is, yeah, I just like, let's try and unfrack that shit. But yeah, I mean, this is the dangerous thing about like queer people who end up taking the main stage, like Ellen DeGeneres and RuPaul.
Ellen. Oh boy.
If you've spent your life developing the kind of tool belt of skills to defend yourself from criticism, they include trusting yourself, believing in yourself at any cost, and ignoring people who are trying to bring you down. And so if you've Like imagine being Ellen in the 90s or RuPaul in the 90s and having to defend yourself from just the most vile bigots that have ever existed. And then by the time that, like, the mid-teens roll around, you are now using that same skill set, but all you hear is the critique and your body just goes into that automatic response. You can no longer hear the difference between dissent and, like, questioning, like, who you are. So you defend yourself and wall yourself off and stop being able to have an active critique of yourself and your values, because had you had those active critiques of yourself in the 90s, those critiques include you're a disgusting human being who deserves to be killed. So you can't take that in. And it is a worrisome thing, but, like, these people are the most well-trained and well-conditioned people in the whole wide world at listening to themselves and ignoring any critique.
I don't think I've ever heard that expressed quite so well. That's you make an excellent point. And it's something, it's a thought I've tried to articulate in a slightly different way about certain political commentators with whom I have an issue. Someone like, say, for example, Van Batten, who is a relentless Labour hack, who has a number of deeply problematic opinions and attitudes, but is also a visible woman who is outspokenly feminist in Australia. And so how is it fair to, I mean, maybe not fair, but I think there's a certain element of the same syndrome that you're talking about where you just have to be so strong and so ready to shut out and let criticism bounce off you, because so much of what she would be getting is just vile, misogynist screed that should be ignored.
Yes,
and at a certain point, it's like, it's a. I guess, you know, I can understand the struggle trying to distinguish between somebody who's legitimately trying to have a conversation with you, and somebody who is just telling you, as you say, that you should die.
Yeah, so, well, I think being on the other, I don't know how much hate you guys get. I'm sure you guys get it, but
we're not well known enough to get that much. We've had one person comment, "Worst podcast ever," which. It's still in and of itself kind of high praise.
Fabulous. Like, that's an achievement. Yeah. You've done something. At least, Well, I do kind of some YouTube reacts with my sister girls, the Beastie Girls.
Please plug your shit, because we're on the clock. We've got 10 minutes and we have to do the Positivity Corner segment as well.
I will say that this is not my Positivity Corner, but being, like, in the crosshairs of people starting to critique me, and in the course of kind of doing 3 seasons of this on YouTube, we're not big famous people by any means, but we do get, like, a lot of people telling me, like, that I'm really ugly and that I'm a piece of shit and that I should drink bleach and, like, it's stunning. And these are other gay people, which is, we're very good at abusing each other. But, like, you do start to get an understanding of, like, how you have to kind of train yourself to stop listening at a certain point, even at that level. Like, and I can't imagine being at a scale where, you know, fame is a cancer and it's a really terrifying, awful thing that happens to people with a lot of perks on the side. It's very shiny cancer. But the idea that, like, these super famous people, like, I can't imagine, like, the amount that, like, their lives are destroyed. It breaks people. Just having people comment on you and, like, say awful things about you. Yeah.
No, and, like, I'm, you know, so sorry that you have had to deal with that. That's absolutely fucked.
I mean,
but, you know,
I mean,
say,
it's
like,
come with the good stuff, but yeah.
For sure. Yes, so as I mentioned, I have asked Robbie to prepare a Positivity Corner this week. So do you want to hit us?
Oh my God. So
I'll take that as a yes.
I it's a really, 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 it's a terrible Positivity Corner, but I want to say, like, life has been a real fucking piece of shit recently. But in a weird way, suddenly getting this amount of time to be with my family and to be sat at home on a sort of time off that has, like, I mean, I'm still working, but in a time off and working from home that has no foreseeable end, has been just so fucking good and kind of reminded me of, like, the value of, like, just, like, sleeping and taking long walks and not trying to orchestrate, like, every moment. So it's like, you know, like, in the before time when, you know, you'd have a holiday, you will try and plan every moment of those, like, 10 allotted days that you've given yourself. And this is, like, just kind of a beautiful moment of people, like, getting back to, like, just sitting around and talking to each other and kind of showing us, like, how much we don't need that capitalism is giving us. Like, I don't want to take away from the fact that this is going to put us into a depression and that I'll probably take all this back. And also that we're, like, just thousands and thousands and thousands of people are going to die. This is terrible. And that's not my point. But it is just amazing to kind of, to just have time for the first time in a long time.
Look, I honestly totally relate to that, and I think a lot of people are experiencing a similar kind of silver lining, I suppose, to this awful situation that we're in. But as you say, it's kind of and we've talked about this on the show over previous weeks, the way that this kind of crisis puts pressure on the system, you know, on capitalism, and exposes the cracks. And it's shown people that, yeah, I mean, we don't need to live our lives revolving around the workplace as one thing, you know, and that not doing that, refocusing our lives sort of around the home, if you do have a positive home life, is, you know, you can, it enables you to live in this much more kind of, in this way that centers yourself and your well-being in a way that having to, you know, the being on the clock and having to, like, relentlessly manage every second of your day in order to fit it all in just doesn't allow for.
Oh, so, and how quickly they were like, you know, oh, this doesn't really matter. You can work from home. Like, it's just suddenly solutions to problems that were seemingly insurmountable under regular circumstances have been like, oh, no, that doesn't even matter. And you're like, what?
Oh, you could have raised NewStart at any point? Interesting.
Yeah, like, fucking hell. Oh, my God. Bernie,
sorry.
I hate you.
Job sequa.
Goddamn. Okay. My parents' dog, Bernie Sanders, the socialist dog.
R.I.P.
He just can't decide whether to come in. He's been another little shining moment of this whole quarantine, haven't you, Bernadette?
Oh, what a lucky little guy.
But the other thing is, like, kind of adjacent to this bright spot is that just before I got on this call, I had, like, an hour-long phone date. This very sweet, very cute boy had jumped into my Instagram DMs.
Wow.
Which just, like, recently. We know each other, but, like, not very well. And so it's, like, really fucking really adorable and really adorable and cute to, like, have to really get to know someone because we can't just go and, like, have, like, an okay hookup and never see each other again. Mm-hmm. So I'm living, and I think we're going to, like, we've already done, like, a little movie date, and I'm just so cute. I encourage everyone to do the same with your friends.
That is cute. That's extremely sweet. Well, thank you very much for that. we don't normally do this, but last week I asked for our listeners to submit a little bit of audio of themselves talking about a kind of silver lining or, you know, something nice that has happened to them in the last couple of weeks, something that is giving them hope for Positivity Corner, so I could play a little compilation of that on the show. And so far, I've received literally fucking no submissions. So, either nobody's having a good time, which is totally fair, or you're shy, which is also fair. But if you're neither of those things, I'd love
to all of you non-shy people having a great time during this pandemic. Fuck you.
They're too busy being, you know, extroverts
being on cute fucking dates. Yeah,
fucking house party. I had to delete that app. So obnoxious.
Anyway, is it obnoxious? Because I haven't got it yet. Should I get it?
It's so deeply. Look, if you ask me, no. I've had two experiences with it. I installed it, and the moment I installed it, it opened up and opened a video chat with somebody while I was on the toilet.
No
input for me. And then later, when I had I was going to sleep and I have my phone connected to my Bluetooth speaker to play the sleepy waves to send me to sleep.
Oh, are you one of those?
And someone called, I am one of those, and someone called me on House Party at midnight and it started blasting this ringtone that I'd never heard before that sounded like an insect scuttling around the room. And I just,
absolutely fucking not.
I had a fucking heart attack and I have deleted the app then and there.
But is this an issue with House Party the app or your general like friend group?
I think that part of the fun, or part of the concept of the app is that people can drop in and to your house at any time. Look, I don't really know how it works. I understand that I sound like a crotchety old miser.
I stand by you. I don't want fucking anyone to be able to contact me at any time. My phone is on silent for a fucking reason. How dare you?
Thank you very much. I'm enjoying the, I enjoy the ability to refuse calls.
Oh,
but maybe that's just
I will
me.
Refuse calls all day long. I love my friends, but only when I decide to.
Couldn't have put it better myself. All right, we are coming up to an hour, which is going to make this episode like an hour and a half long, which is going to make it our longest episode ever. So,
oh my
gosh, you listeners,
I'm
have
so
enjoyed this.
Sorry.
It's quarantine time, you know. This used to be a half-hour show, and slowly it's crept up to an hour. And apparently, like, I asked listeners if they had a problem with it, and apparently the only person that bothers is me, because it's twice as much work, or in this case, three times. But,
well, you know,
I hope that you and...
I listen to a lot of, like, 2.5 hour long podcasts. If any of you listen to Blank Check, that is a great 2.5 to 3 hour long podcast. And I think they're great. So maybe let's push this Ozpol snack pod into the new frontier. Let's make it a 5 hour podcast.
Oh my God. You're going to send me into another dimension. Plug your shit. What do you want to plug?
Okay, so because we're about to go into quarantine, we will be putting out an amazing, edited version of our Fringe show onto YouTube. You can go and check me out on Instagram at Ms. Lazy Susan, where you'll find that I haven't posted anything in weeks. You'll also find me on, YouTube, with reacts to RuPaul's Drag Race. If that is your speed, you can go there. And that is, Ms. Lazy Susan. I don't know. And then, otherwise if you're very quiet on a cold winter's night, you can hear me crying in my house drinking martinis.
Which, in my opinion, is the best way to consume Lazy Susan content, is just to go very quiet and tune in to the frequency of the universe and hear the tinking of the martini glass.
And if you would like to consume Lazy Susan, I recommend salt.
Every time. Healthy doses.
Thank you.
Nice, okay. Nice one. Thank you so much for coming on the show and adding a little bit of color.
I didn't say faggot once. You faggoty boys bringing a little bit of color to this show. Oh, we love it. We love a little bit of spice, a little bit of hot tamale.
Spicing up our normally extremely dry communist
I've
propaganda.
Heard your show. It's not extremely dry.
That is a very generous lie. Thank you very much.
Worst podcast I've ever heard. Well, that's what I've heard.
Why, thank you. You're not the first person to tell me that. But yes, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a genuine pleasure. I reckon we're probably going to have to do this again.
Yes, please. Have me on.
Yes. I hope that you continue to make the most of quarantine, and I hope that our listeners go and seek out your stuff. I really can't recommend the Beastie Girls and Lazy Susan's content highly enough. We've all got, you know, a few extra minutes in the day these days to go and watch some YouTube, so please.
Oh, that's
do
right
it.
On my YouTube you will find the video that Zachariah was talking about, of me coming out of a drag mother, so go and you can
oh,
go
is
and
there
like
a, I've never I have to go back and revisit it. Oh my God.
Oh, there is a video.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so you can find that there and see how wrong he truly was. It really does exist better in the memory.
Yeah, maybe you had to be there front row. Cool. So thank you very much for listening to this, rambly conversation with us. I guess me and Noom will probably record the outro separately, so we can just say goodbye now, Lazy.
Okay. Ciao for now, Chooks. Dua Lipa fans, hello. And Charlie XCX fans, hello. Okay. Love you, kids. I'll see you later.
Hey, Noon, do you know who Dua Lipa is?
No, I'm very uncool and don't listen to music. So, no, that's not true. I just listen to the same, like, 12 songs that I liked when I was 14.
And all of them are by Real Big Fish.
Hey, we said we weren't going to discuss my ska enthusiasm on the show, Zach. We're going to lose patrons.
I hope you enjoyed that chat with Lazy. You know, we wanted to bring you something that wasn't just totally corona-related at this time,
yeah.
Because I'm sure that everybody is sick of hearing and thinking about it. Obviously, it's important that we engage with those issues and keep following them. But, you know, also it's nice to think about something else for a little bit. So thank you so much, Lazy, for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. Please do go and follow her and the Beastie Girls on social media. You will not regret it.
Hell yeah. Before we wrap up, I was just going to say we've got a review, which is very exciting.
The first in some time.
Quite a while. Yeah, we've got a bunch of new patrons, but patrons, you haven't been leaving reviews. So come on. I mean, thanks, but come on. listeners who don't want to support us on Patreon, that's totally fine. Totally get it. Many people are unemployed and we are just a couple dudes. So it's fine not to give us money, but we would love a review if you enjoy the show. So you can do that on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, I think, or wherever else. So this review is from Paul from Adelaide, who gave us 5 stars. Thanks, Paul. And it goes like this. Great podcast. Finally, a great podcast that represents cromulent leftist analysis of news and politics in Australia, something desperately needed in these trying times. Noon and Zach, spelt wrong, are both sensible, funny, and play off each other well and shine a light on important issues that are either ignored or glossed over by mainstream media, while also providing great info on political theory and leftist economics. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Paul. That is so nice.
Appreciate it, Paul.
I feel very
Thank you very much. Yeah, big time. And it's okay. There's been several variations on the spelling of my name in various different comments. You'd think a one-syllable word wouldn't contain such multitudes, but there you go.
My cousins have just had a baby, and they're naming it Zach, not short for anything, which your name is also not short for anything. And when my mum told me that, I was like, oh no, he's going to get so many misspelt Zachs. But yeah, well.
That's not true. My name's short for Zachary.
Is it? I always thought it was your full name was Zach. That's hilarious. Wow. Well, nice to meet you anyway.
Yeah, learning something new every week about each other on OzPolStack.
That's so funny.
This is why we love doing the show. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please follow us on all the socials. You know where to find us, I presume.
Yeah.
If you are new to the show and you found us because of Lazy, thanks for joining. And yeah, just Google OzPolStack Pod, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. We're in all the spots. Hope everybody is keeping as well as possible, staying safe, and make sure that you keep on snacking in the free world.
Crunch, crunch.